Next is agenda item two. This is an action item on smoke management rule key changes. And staff will introduce this. And
good morning, Chair Emson, members of the board, State Forester Daugherty. For the record, my name is Doug Graff. I serve as Chief of Fire Protection for the Oregon Department of Forestry. I'll take some time today to introduce the topic, walk the board through its packet in hand, and then turn it over to my colleagues to my left, Michael Orman from Department of Environmental Quality and Kirsten Aird from Oregon Health Authority to speak specifically on significant rule changes before the board for consideration. Then turn it to Nick Yonka to my right to highlight other key changes within the rules. And then I'll close with a few thoughts. The purpose for the board meeting is for consideration for rule adoption, seeking that rule adoption today, a decision item. And I'll close with inviting Deputy Director, DEQ, to the table, Leah Felden, along with your liaison to the Environmental Quality Commission, Wade Mosby, to close out some thoughts as the board deliberates on this decision. We'll target a half hour for our presentation. We do have an hour today. If we can tighten that up a little bit, I see we're a little bit past, we'll work towards that. But certainly want to honor the opportunity for the board to have time to deliberate and ask questions of the panel. So with that in your board packet, you have a staff report that will really walk through the presentation. We've aligned the presentation today to hit those key elements in the staff report. And first, within the staff report, there's a recognition of the policies and authorities before the board. There's recognition, as we've been to the table before the board on this topic in the past, that this is a joint decision, along with Environmental Quality Commission, to be approved into the state implementation plan. And that's the importance of that link and asking Commissioner Mosby and the director, Deputy Director DEQ to join. There's recognition that the board administers this program. The State Department of Forestry administers, and the board has authority for promulgation of those rules. The balance sought in the program review is to improve, to seek the balance between improve the management of prescribed burning as a forest management and protection practice and to minimize emissions from prescribed burning consistent with air quality objectives, Federal Clean Air Act and State Implementation Plan. The emphasis in the process that we engaged in a couple years ago, as I'll highlight, was really focusing on how we can adjust the rules to create more opportunities for prescribed burning to mitigate the growing and risk of catastrophic wildfire on the landscape. This review process was an impetus that came out of the fire program review following the 13 to 15 fire seasons where we had challenging fire seasons. This was a recommendation out of that effort to open up the books and review the rules with that focus. The next bullet here, the Joint Board of Forestry Environmental Quality Commission, you can see we started this conversation with both boards in a joint meeting in 2016. So this has taken some time. This has been a very healthy policy conversation with full engagement from Oregonians across the state. And the significance of this topic is really important to recognize that we did have that engagement. And we have local champions on this topic, and Oregonians participated and engaged in a way to help us see a clear vision forward to find a greater balance to mitigate that risk of catastrophic wildfire. And you see that within the rules. It started with a joint meeting in 2016 in Ashland. We took the commission, Environmental Quality Commission, and the board on a tour. Ashland was an outstanding host and a local leader in this conversation. And we can glean a lot of vision in terms of where we want to move based on what we see in terms of active forest management in and around water, Ashland's watershed, which ends with prescribed burning to complete the transition to ensure resiliency in their forests to mitigate the risks that there are concerns in and around Ashland, as the previous presenter mentioned. So very pleased to see that work in Ashland. We then went to Eugene to also, in 2017, engage with the two commissions to highlight additional prescribed burning activity in and around Lane County. We established a review committee in May of 2017 to guide the agencies in their recommendation rule changes. That's the first attachment within your packet. 21 members, broad range of Oregonians, all showed up at the table with a shared vision of how we can find balance in those two goals, and they represented very well. There were certainly challenges. Air quality interests and burning interests were not completely aligned, but we certainly found a set of principles through that process and recognition that increased burning was important to mitigate that risk. And you'll see that in some of the public hearing results and data. I was very proud of that work and the way people engaged in that process, seeking balance and compromise in the conversation. As we talked more on the rules, we'll discuss those key components more. I probably can't thank that membership enough. I've emphasized the local leadership and new relationships that were built, for example, with Oregon Lung Association and local county health programs to engage in this important conversation for all Oregonians. Those are the types of folks we'll be leveraging long-term to move this policy towards implementation if the board sees that through today. We returned to the Board of Forestry in June of 2018. With a request to initiate rulemaking process. We had a draft set of rules. The board adjusted those rules to include an exemption to the one-hour threshold that we'll discuss in detail. I would draw your attention to the next components of your packet, which is the public hearings review and the rules themselves. My assessment is, and based on the public hearings, that was a very keen and astute adjustment by the board and well supported through those public hearings as you look at the data and those results to find more opportunity and alignment to balance those two goals. So you'll see that came out well. Specifically in the rules before you in the packet, we wanted to highlight the changes that were made since the board's meeting on June 2018. So, and we highlighted that in blue text in bold and strike through, so you can see the adjustments from when we originally presented and recognize that we heard what was said during the public hearing process and the board direction to implement those changes. So we highlighted that color so that distinction was clear for you. And then finally, today, again, here for seeking approval for rule adoption. I'll close with the next steps once after I turn it over to my colleagues here. And with that, Michael.
Chair Imeson, commissioners, my name is Michael Orman, and I'm the Air Quality Planning Section Manager for DEQ. I'm going to spend some time walking us through some of the policy decision space that was discussed in this rulemaking effort and describe where we landed in the policy discussion. And then hand the mic over to my colleague to my left, Kirsten Aird from OHA, to talk more about the health aspects of these different thresholds that are proposed. So my understanding is that when the rulemaking effort started, we were in football season, and we've always talked about this slide as a goalpost. So I'll continue that practice. On the far left, we have the goalpost of 0 micrograms per cubic meter, and that represents the existing smoke management program, where the goal of the existing program is no smoke enters our smoke-sensitive receptor areas. The far right is the National Ambient Air Quality Standard, which is a health-based standard established by EPA for the nation. And for the pollutant of concern for smoke is PM2.5, and that goal is 35 micrograms per cubic meter. And so when we started the conversation about how do we increase the pace and scale of burning, but also protect against public health and the goals established in the Clean Air Act, this is the space that we were able to work with. And so the first goal that we've established in the proposed rule is 26 micrograms per cubic meter, which is 75% of the national ambient air quality standards. And the purpose of that threshold is to protect against exceedances of the national ambient air quality standard. The goal here is to not exceed the national ambient air quality standard. If you have too many exceedances, there can be economic impacts to a community, and there's additional work that DEQ would have to do to bring that community back into attainment. So our goal is to not exceed that, and that's the purpose of the 26 micrograms. But in discussions with our stakeholders and members of the review committee, we heard clearly that there was concern about short-term impacts, and that's the 70 micrograms per cubic meter, which is a one-hour average. And so the purpose of that metric, that threshold, is to protect against short-term impacts, high smoke events, burns that happen near communities. We see this spike of concentrations and then a quick return back to background. And that the purpose of that metric is to protect against those impacts and make sure that appropriate conversations happen around those impacts before they occur. The white space that you see there represents the window that has been opened for increased burning. The metric that we've established, or that we, the estimate that we have of increased burning capacity, is about 80% based off of the historical data from the smoke management program. And we feel like this was a good policy balance to increase the smoke, increase the use of prescribed fire, while also protecting against public health impacts. I'll hand the mic to Kirsten.
Kirsten, I might make a comment first before we transition. The 80% assessment there by Michael is referencing, we plotted the last 10 years of intrusions that we have experienced. So any smoke ground level within a community that meant intrusion, we plotted it on this graphic. And 80% of those intrusions fell within the newly recommended zone of smoke. It's a smoke incident. 20% of those fell within what's proposed as an intrusion now. So the opportunity is to conduct more of those lighter incidents where we had smoke into those communities, and that's where the 80% comes. That's also where, when you dissect the 1 hour and the 24 hour, the challenge with the group defined alignment, where we did not get was the 1 hour does pose a stricter regulation than the 24 hour. So 10% of those intrusions fell in here, and the large majority of those intrusions are close in to communities where it's prioritized to achieve that goal. So when the board stepped in with an exemption process to the 1 hour, essentially providing opportunity to seek success in achieving those land management goals in and around communities for prescribed burning. And I'll highlight that again as we speak. Thank you, Kirsten.
Yes, thank you. Good morning, Chair Imason and board members. I'm very happy to be here today to certainly follow on what Doug and Michael have said and to provide information about what's at stake regarding health. But one thing I want to make really clear from the Oregon Health Authority and the Public Health Division's perspective, and I should say my name is Kirsten Aird, and that's who I work for, And I really appreciate the wisdom that came from the board around the exemption, because what to me has become exceptionally clear about the 1 hour is that it's the threshold for the community conversation. It's not a no. It recognizes that there is a health impact in 1 hour and short term, and all the science says that. But what it really says is creates a system for how do we thoughtfully and meaningfully engage our communities in really important dialogue about what can be planned. And that's the benefit with prescribed burns. It can be planned. But let me talk a little bit more about the science as I set that stage for the 1 hour. I really do want to underscore the strong evidence of health impacts for short-term smoke exposure and why it matters. While smoke contains numerous air pollutants, it's the fine particulates, that 2.5 particulate matter that we're really worried about. We're worried about a lot of things, but that's the one I'm going to talk about today. So just this fall, in October of 18, EPA issued its integrated science assessment for particulate matter that comprehensively reviewed the science around exposure to fine particulate matter as the basis for the federal government's regulation of fine particulates in ambient air. And in all of those 1,800 pages, the one thing that is exceptionally clear is that there is no safe exposure to particulate matter 2.5. None. And then we live in reality. What the report found was that there's certainly causal relationship between short-term fine particulate exposure and heart disease death and disability. And what we mean by short-term is hours to days. The report also found that there is a causal relationship between short-term particulate 2.5 exposure and respiratory effects. So chronic obstructive disorder, asthma, things that just kind of make us cough and irritated and land us with short-term issues in the emergency room. So OHA support of the 1 hour threshold recognizes that it's a decision to balance the known health risks of short-term exposure with prescribed burning against the even greater risk to life and health from wildfire. As informed by OHA's climate and health work, we are in a new normal, and I heard you all talking about that this morning. We have reoccurring extended wildfire seasons that are going to be increasing the severity of human health impacts from wildfire. We understand that prescribed burning is one of the few management tools available to us to reduce the intensity of wildfires. But unlike wildfires, we can work with partners and local communities to plan for prescribed burning and make every effort to see to it that sensitive populations, including young children, older adults, and people living with asthma, are protected. As such, our focus will be to ensure there is meaningful community engagement, including advanced planning and health risk communication, as well as technical assistance and guidance for creating and implementing smoke management plans. Oregon Health Authority looks forward to our continued collaboration with ODF and DEQ in the implementation of Oregon's smoke management program, including the development of updated operational guidance for the smoke management program and ongoing monitoring and evaluation of the effectiveness of prescribed burning as a management tool to reduce wildfire smoke and intensity. Thank you.
Thank you, Kirsten. I'll turn it over to Nick to talk about you can see we've had alignment with the agencies on opportunities for increased burning, and a recognition and a principle from the review committee was if we're going down that road of opportunity, then there's an expectation for increased communication, understanding with our communities. That there will be more smoke in the air in a prescribed manner on the shoulder seasons outside of wildfire season, where we can mitigate those smoke impacts and mitigate the health risks by communicating when and where we see the smoke entering communities, to provide some perspective before we speak on communications again. We burn approximately, through prescribed burning, 160,000 acres. We regulate both federal and private lands regarding prescribed burns. So it's split, the acres burned about half and half on federal and private lands. We have over 3,000 ignitions, so prescribed burns on an annual basis, and we're averaging in the 8 to 10 intrusions currently. So highly effective at keeping smoke out. So I wanted to make sure we understand the scope of the issue, and of course we're treading a new ground, and we'll see what we can accomplish in the future with these rules. but limited smoke in the communities now. And we need a plan in terms of how we're going to communicate in the future and engage those communities so we can continue to have that social license to prescribe burn. And I'll turn it to Nick.
Good morning, Chair Imason, State Forester Doherty, and members of the board. I'm Nick Yocker. I'm the Smoke Management Program Manager. As Doug introduced, I will be talking about our other key recommendation that you know, you saw on the fact that we are going to increase the amount of or change the definition of the smoke intrusion to allow a greater amount of burning that could be accomplished. Obviously, with a greater amount of burning that can be accomplished, that means there's greater risk for smoke impacts into communities we're trying to protect, known as SSRAs or smoke sensitive receptor areas. So the review committee and the agencies recognized that we needed to do something to help protect the communities that we're trying to protect, to give them forewarning that there may be some greater impacts. And so we've developed this essentially a communication plan through, it's in rule 0180, that section. It's a completely new rule. We have had in the past some work on public outreach, but this is a whole new ballgame. So we are going to be doing a considerable change and an increase in public outreach and communication statewide and to local communities. So I'll go ahead with the slide here. So this communication plan is really has two components to it. One is the statewide plan that ODF will initiate working with our public affairs, maybe Oregon Forest Research Institute, to come up with a plan that gives us a media outreach of explain why prescribed burning is important to the state and also the health risks associated with not only wildfire but prescribed burning as well and how we can mitigate some of that risk to the public, especially those areas we are trying to protect. That's the key factor that we will probably start out with is the statewide communication plan. And we will use that as we go to the local level, which is the local community response plans that we want to initiate. So this is going to be the big heavy lift for us to work with when you're dealing with communities. You have to deal with the local officials, whether it's city officials, local community leaders, and so forth. But we find that this is necessary. And so in the response plan, we're basically going to focus on the vulnerable smoke sensor receptor areas. These are the areas that have had repeated smoke intrusions. Not all smoke sensor receptor areas have repeated intrusions. There's some that have very few. We're going to focus on the key ones that have the problem. We're already, there's two places that are already jumping on board that they are planning to get a community response plan right away, and that's Bend and Ashland. I suspect that we'll probably see up to 10 to 12 areas that we are at least initially going to be looking at, split between the west side of the Cascades and the east side of the Cascades. So these plans are going to essentially, we'll work on this collaboratively with ODF and DEQ, and we will need the local county health department to basically kind of take the lead focus on this, but they will not be alone, and we'll be working with the community to try to let them know what's necessary for the plan, but recognize that each community can do things within the rule in their own way, and it all depends on the resources that the community may have and also what the leadership is looking for in a community response plan. And basically what we're looking for is how the officials and how the public, especially members of the public who are very sensitive to smoke, usually the very young, the very old, those who have compromised lung and heart function and so forth, we need to basically get out that information on what burning is taking place on a daily basis. We already have a website that does that as it stands now. We just basically need to integrate that with the community so they know where they can get that information. How community members can reduce risk, smoke risk and exposure from burning so they know that when they're burning right in their near their community, that they know that there's potential that smoke could get into that community, and they know what to do to take action to get away from that smoke, whether it's sheltering in place in the home or staying away for the day or so. So, and then we're looking at also all the ways that the community can find out about smoke impacts that may come from not only the local area, but even further away. So those are the two main components of our communication plan that we are going to have to work on. It will not be a short term solution. It will take some time. It could take years to completely implement, but it's a start, and it's something we have not done whatsoever in this program. So it's a new initiative that we will be looking at. So as mentioned before, the board in June got input from some of the stakeholders that were on our committee and others that there was concern with the short-term smoke impact. It's kind of been mentioned that that was too restrictive, and for communities like them that need to do more prescribed burning to prevent another paradise from occurring, that they need to have the ability to get some type of an exemption. And that's what the board granted, that we come back with some type of process. And that's what we've done in 0180 to get that process out. So essentially what we're looking for is that from that, that you have to have a community response plan already in place. And then that community response plan has to go through your local leadership, the city council, and the board of commissioners, and then comes to ODF and DEQ, along with help and assistance from OHA, to get approval for that plan. So that may take a little time, but in order to get that exemption from the 1 hour and just only have to deal with the 24-hour intrusion average, that's what we're requiring for that situation. We also found, the agencies found that we can't say that an exemption can be a free pass to burn whatever you want, because at some point, even 1 hour, enough 1 hours are going to average to an intrusion at the 24-hour level, and even potentially an ambient air quality standard exceedance. So there can be the revoking of that exemption, and basically that would be if we have too many intrusions at the 24-hour level, or you get some ambient air quality exceedances. And at that point, when we see that there's going to be a problem with that, that we potentially could cause a violation, that we will have to take action to revoke an exemption. We hope we don't have to do that, but that is an option that we need to use in there, and you see that in the rules. So essentially that gives a picture of how we were going to communicate out, provide for that exemption for the program.
Thank you, Nick. In the packet, you have a robust hearings report, and it summarizes the engagement from the public. 174 people engaged in the five meetings that we held across the state in 2018. Nick and Michael were at all of those presentations. 74 people provided information, comments to us written and orally. 56 were in favor of more burning. Two were not. So there's an overwhelming interest and support for the increase in prescribed burning to mitigate the risk of catastrophic wildfire. I would also highlight in that in the summary page, which is the final page on the hearings, you can see 38 individuals were against the 1 hour smoke threshold. Yet 38 individuals were for the exemption. So that's the expression there is the burning, the folks with burning interests showed up at the public hearings and expressed their interest to remove the 1 hour, but were willing to accept the exemption that we had. So I think that's good business and decision, and why I referenced that. Also, why would we not remove the 1 hour? I go back to the 21-member review committee and the 7 air quality interests that were represented at that review committee expressed critical importance that we maintain a 1 hour threshold in that conversation. So the hearings don't fully represent the full process of our work to date. With that, next steps, the board deliberate and seeking decision for approval for the rules presented today. We would go to Environmental Quality Commission with the same conversation and express where the board stood. We would file the rules if approved through both Environmental Quality Commission and the board with Secretary of State, and would implement the rules for the spring burning, which begins in and around March. So with that said, I think it's important to hear from Deputy Director DEQ, and you have a liaison with Environmental Quality Commission, Wade Mosby. So if you could come to the table and share some thoughts with the board.
Thank you, Doug. Thank you, Chair Imeson and members of the board. As Doug said, for the record, my name is Leah Felden. I'm the Deputy Director at the Department of Environmental Quality, and I'm really pleased to address the board today on behalf of DEQ. The Department of Forestry and DEQ initiated work on this rulemaking 2 years ago, as you've heard. And throughout the process, we've been aligned in the basic desired outcome, enhancing Oregon's forest management to help reduce the frequency and duration of catastrophic wildfires. We've also been aligned in wanting to limit public health impacts from any kind of smoke. This alignment was the foundation for working through tough policy considerations to reach the right outcome, and DEQ believes that we have. The most difficult of policy issues, where all desired outcomes are important and aimed at the protection of public health and safety, are those that, at the end of the day, required a balanced policy solution. I'm pleased with the agency's commitment to a thoughtful and robust process that considered the input of those with specific expertise and interest in the issue to make the changes to the smoke management plan. Going forward, DEQ is committed to working with forestry, OHA, and local governments in the implementation of the rules. We're committed to working with these partners to ensure that we employ reasonable and efficient processes to approve local community plans, as we value their commitment to the same outcomes for public health and safety. This is a common interest that we all hold in having local involvement and local planning. I think it is important to note that this change alone will not completely mitigate the risk or the impact from the growing wildfire duration and frequency. But we look forward to the opportunity to implement this piece of the broader policy needed while maintaining the important components of public health protection. So with that, I would like to turn it over to our Environmental Quality Commissioner, Wade Mosby, for some comments. And thank you again for the opportunity to address you today.
Yep. Chair Imeson, State Forester Doherty, board members, I'm Wade Mosby, as you said, from the EQC Commission, and your liaison. I just wanted to congratulate this working group here. I'll tell you, we got used to Doug's New England accent, but Doug and Nick and Michael and Kristen, we're a great team.
You sorted it out more quickly than we did. We thought he was from Australia.
So Doug did a great job, and you've got a real asset there. I can tell you both Doug and Nick, and we're really proud of Michael, and obviously Kirsten from the OHA has been instrumental. I just want to congratulate you for hopefully passing this. A couple things that I thought were really important to the EQC board, and the one we've talked a lot about is the one-hour rule. And in September of 2017, we had a town hall in Bend, and what really opened my eyes, if some of you can remember what Bend looked like in September of 2017, it was a lot of smoke. In the town hall, a young mother of elementary school children attended the town hall and raised something that I hadn't thought about. The Bend Lapine School District was using the 24-hour rule, and that morning they had sent her children, elementary school children, out to play for recess and for physical education in really pretty extreme circumstances. One of the local radio stations was using the one-hour rule, and it was way off the charts, way above the 2.5. So she came to the town hall that evening and got our attention. And subsequently, it's my understanding the Ben Lapine School District has changed to the 1 hour. That, as a former forest products guy, that was a real eye-opener for me. Health of children with EQC is extremely important. I think OHA will chide us on that too. So that was the transition where I became in favor of the 1 hour rule with exemptions, which I think is really important for the industry. And this other thing was in November of 2017, we had the joint meeting and the field trip. And the other big question, and you'll notice there, is the use of polyethylene tarps. And you guys did a great job, ODF did, in showing us that we burn a lot hotter, we don't have the emissions, the piles get burnt quicker, and the polyethylene doesn't put out the noxious things that typical plastic does. So those are the two big things. I think you've done a great job. I can tell you, if you guys pass this, I personally will be supporting it 2 weeks from now in Corvallis. And I think from discussions with other EQC commissioners that this is something we can live with, we can work with. I think it's good for the public. It's good for the health. It'll be reasonable for the industry. And lastly, our work's not going to be undone. When we hopefully get this passed and implemented in March, we've got an education job to do. The public, with wildfire and prescribed burning, and I still call slash pile burning, the public, we're urban now. Let's face it. The majority of our population is urban areas. We've done a really poor job, all of us at the state, of educating people. We need to get the scientists and academics. We need to use your agencies. We need to get some of the industry agencies. We need to get out and tell the story. The wildfire is accelerating. There's no doubt. We've heard that. We know it's changing. Prescribed burning is a great management tool. We need it, but we need to educate the public. And I would say that our job's not going to be done until we complete that. Thank you.
Thanks. And I couldn't agree with you more about the collaboration that's occurred here. And I think it's the way that things should work. You know, instead of bouncing issues back and forth from one agency or commission to another board, this is far superior to that. So I appreciate the way everybody has worked together, and really appreciate also EQC considering the exemption process that we adopted in rather vague form at our meeting last June. So, are there questions though for folks on any of the issues associated with this?
Yeah, I also very much appreciate all the work that's gone into this over the last 2 years, and the collaborative approach that the three agencies have taken to provide some increased latitude for prescribed burning. I think, as you referenced this morning, the board, but more broadly, I think the broad community of stakeholders engaged in the management, stewardship, and care of Oregon's forests is concerned about the projections for increased wildfire, both in terms of frequency and severity, and the impacts that has across the state in multiple ways, including on human health and safety and lives. And so we appreciate the space that's been carved out. And as I told Doug and Peter, I'm prepared to vote in favor of the rules that have been presented and appreciate the work. That being said, there are certainly a lot of people in Eastern Oregon that are concerned, as you referenced, about the 1 hour limit, the 70 micrograms, and it would like to know or sort of establish more clarity about how that level was set, what the science is behind that, or if it's just a reflection of uncertainty or other political trade-offs that resulted in that. I really like the way you phrased it as kind of a trigger for the community conversation. And I also strongly agree, as I stated back in LeGrand when we talked about the exemption, that you know, there are clearly impacts on a variety of people from, and maybe all of us, on short-term smoke exposure. So I appreciate the need that it's there, but I think it would be helpful for people to understand better how we set that, so that as this conversation continues and as we move into the future and all the uncertainty that it has relative to climate, to fire, that we know why this baseline was set and can review that. So I think that would help. The second thing in terms of the exemption is, you know, this trade-off between defining things top down really clearly and providing a little bit of latitude for local groups to define how they want to respond to this community conversation. And I think you all know there's some questions about some of the terms that still need to be defined. I think from my perspective, the most important thing here is that we are committed, the appropriate agencies plan for and commit the time, the staffing to work with communities, particularly these high risk communities that you mentioned, to work through this process in an efficient way, that this does not become a frustrating bureaucratic process for these communities, that we really figure out how to test and define terms and prove that this process can work in a way that safeguards vulnerable populations but provides the latitude, particularly within these close communities, as you said, these communities that are more likely to have intrusions, to get the prescribed burning done and try to address the real risk to those communities from wildfire, the really heightened risk. And the third thing I think is more, I guess, a question around our the uncertainty and sort of looking into the future. Could we agree within a year or 2 years on certain metrics or report back, Doug, from your staff and ideally from jointly from the three agencies, how this has played out and is this working? And use that to then make a determination whether or not we should revisit this faster than 5 years or not, or whether we're making good progress and we found that right balancing point between trying to address the forest conditions and the wildfire risk while safeguarding vulnerable populations and health. You know, and I do think, I mean, I appreciate through this whole process too, and both the meetings we've had, but also the Oregon Fire Summit that OSU put on in at the World Forestry Center, the discussion around protecting vulnerable populations. And, you know, and clearly I think we need as a state and as everybody in this room to take that obligation seriously, because whether it's wildfire smoke or prescribed smoke, those safeguards will benefit everybody. And it would be great if we can be leaders, not just in our fire militia and mitigation, you know, in our response to fire, but also in safeguarding those populations. Thanks.
Michael and Kirsten would take number one, and Nick and I will take number two and three.
Commissioners and members of the board, I think I'll start by seeing if we can flip back to the slides just so that we have the goalpost up as a reference. But as we're getting that prepared, you know, when we approach this policy discussion about how much of the window should be opened, we looked at some of the tools that we use at DEQ to communicate about health risk from pollution. You'll note on the left, this left arrow, vertical arrow, that's referenced at the top by the AQI, that's the Air Quality Index. That's a tool the DEQ uses to report out on concentrations of pollution at our air quality monitors The tool's use is to take some complicated science and communicate in a way that's effective and in a way that the community member could take action to protect their health. And so we look to that tool to evaluate where should we have this 1 hour threshold. The tool is now uses a model called Nowcast, and the purpose of that model is to adjust the averaging time of the air quality index based off of the rate of change of the pollutant that we're looking at. So for PM, if there's a large spike in concentration, then the averaging time would be shorter. And so we look to that tool and to see where would this change happen, where a community member would be flagged to notify that they should take some action to protect their health. And where we landed was the 70. So we saw when you used a 70 in that model, it would report out a unhealthy for sensitive populations. And so that's where we landed. And we had some discussions with the advisory committee on that value. And that's what we've brought for you today.
Yeah, thank you for that question. Because I certainly know it's been swirling out there. So I think, you know, yes, we used Nowcast. We landed on the 70. And to be fair, the way we landed on that was assuming that there was nothing else in the air any hour before or after. And that's not reality. And so the truth is, if we were to look at things from a purely pure health standpoint, that number would be significantly lower. So it was that threshold, and if we took everything else out of consideration and we only looked at what a potential burn could do all by itself, that amount would trigger that change. And we know that's not reality. So to be fair, there's a buffer there. It's a finessing a policy decision to make a marker and an indicator for health that's protective, and yet recognizing that the goal was to find a way to do some more burning, because that also is going to help mitigate wildfire. And so that's kind of how we landed on that. I wanted to share with you that the Association of State and Territorial Health Officers is a national association that includes every health officer in the state, for all the states, so all 51, 50 plus DC, and all environmental health directors as well. And there's a subgroup made up of all the environmental health directors that meets monthly with the EPA and the Centers for Disease Control. The Western states have all asked the feds for very clear guidance on short-term health exposures. The 24-hour standard is a regulatory standard for the NACs, and we'll hear that it's not designed to be a regulatory standard for short-term. But that's not what we're talking about using it for. We're talking about using it for a threshold, because where they all agree emphatically is that it is an indicator for what's happening in our air in the very moments that we're breathing. And that is what is triggering and informing what we need to do in the short term. It's also a helpful indicator for what might be playing out over the 24 hours. And so how do we use this, again, as an opportunity to recognize we might need to burn more intense? And so how do we inform our community about that and help them be prepared on what may happen? So that's the science. And I know Doug wants to answer two or three, but I do have a couple pieces to add to that as well. Chair Christofferson, you are, I mean, sorry, board member, I'm sorry. Like, so used to answering, Chair, sorry. I'm human. He wants it. sorry. You are speaking like a true public health professional. You are speaking to my heart. Evaluation and monitoring on decisions we make and policy decisions are so important. We need to have checkpoints, and that is something we are very committed to with the science and the team that we have back in the public health division to help work with the Department of Forestry and DEQ and checking in on how is this going? Are we getting the outcomes we want? Are we level setting? Are we creating net benefit of bad air quality days? We don't know, but we want to know, and we want to evaluate how well this is working, and is it getting to what the point is, which is protecting people and community and protecting our forests. So I think we're in on that, and I appreciate that question, and we're very committed to that. And the last thing I want to touch on is your second question. Oregon Health Authority And the public health division is public health is a decentralized system in the state of Oregon, which means we have state public health, and then we have local public health authorities in every state. This community planning, communication strategies, that is our bread and butter. That is what we do. And in a modern public health system, which we really are moving towards, you have people, boots on the ground in your community, that know how to convene, that know how to talk about really complex health issues, and then work through solutions together. And you're right, every community is going to do it differently. And so how do we as state agencies work through the flexibility that empowers communities to take a stand and talk about this, and yet provide some guardrails and guidelines for them to stay in that's grounded in science? But you have local folks everywhere that are committed to this and ready to step in.
Okay, I'll continue on number two. And I wrote down the ambiguity in the language. In terms of the exemption, and then return to the board on a status check. I would recognize that the leadership, as Kirsten mentioned on this topic, is locally driven. Very impressed with the engagement. I think we're going to look to Bend and Ashland to form and design effective plans and mitigation strategies. And they're well down the road in those conversations to model in other communities where we're seeing challenges to achieve the land management goals, including prescribed burning. So definitely want to leverage those champions that we have already doing good work on this front. And we held ourselves accountable to a return decision to those committees. You notice in rule, the agencies will return within 30 days. So we wanted that as our commitment and expression. I recognize that each local community will have different tools, as Nick mentioned, available, and we're all in to help as we see fit. So to tighten the language any further in terms of strict this is what we expect and the approval would limit the creativity locally to meet those mitigation strategies. So I think we see alignment to move forward and get those turned around in 30 days. And Nick mentioned maybe 10 to 12. I don't know how many we will get because the intrusions are. We're not isolated in that range at this point in terms of where burning is. Regarding return to the board or EQC on a status check, I would support, as Kirsten mentioned. I'm seeing heads nodding here. Absolutely makes sense. I would suggest we really would need the first year to get our feet on the ground. What you don't see before you is another 50 pages of guidelines and implementation process with far more strike through and red line, because we have a full comprehensive adjustment to how we do business in this field, and Nick and team have done a good job working through that. So I think 2 years is a reasonable model, to suggest, have we changed anything? How many communities do we have with exemptions, and that we engage in effectively in communication plans, and have we staffed accordingly? I would ask for a couple of years for a report back out on status, and that would seem reasonable.
Well, I just remind you that in 2 years, three of us will be here, but won't. So, I think we'll want at least some sense of how things are going after you've had a good season of this, especially on how the exemption process is working. Any other questions, comments? Okay, then the recommendation is that the board approve the adoption of OAR 629-048 with the proposed with the changes that are included in your material. Is there a motion? It's been moved and seconded. Any further discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Thanks again for all of your work and for all the stakeholders.
Can I just reemphasize your comment? Because I think that was a good one. And I think that brings me some confidence in where we're moving, is, Doug, that you could, even if we don't have the full report back in terms of the impact on health and ambient smoke and everything else, that you could at least report back on how the exemption process is working with the communities that first step forward, so we know that we're really working hard to make that process work well.
Yeah, I'm comfortable with that.
Right. Yeah.
Thanks.
Okay, we're now taking a break for, let's make it 10 minutes rather than 15. So by that clock, we'll return at 10:50.